Hello and welcome to this edition of Risk Pods, a service of the Georgia School Boards Association Risk Management Services. My name is David Colvard. I am the Safety and Risk Control Coordinator. Our topic is a very timely one for this session, and it is about our crisis management coverage that we provide for our risk management service members. Joining us today is going to be Greg Light. He is our underwriting manager here at GSBA Risk Management Services. And joining us also is Charles Edwards. He is a member of the Issues Management Practices team of Jackson Spaulding, which is an integrated marketing and communications group. And Charles, when we get to Charles, he will give you a little more information about who they are and what they do. We'd like to begin with Greg kind of giving us a little explanation and an understanding of what is the crisis coverage and what is its purpose.
Well, thank you, David. Appreciate you having me on here. So the crisis coverage, we first offered this coverage in July 1st, 2016, kind of as a response to things that were happening in the world, right? We saw some school shootings. I think that's kind of what prompted it. But we always try to be very proactive in our coverage offering. So it was something that we added way back in, as I said, in July 1st, 2016. And July 1st, 2017, we added a pre-qualified crisis management firm, which is Jackson Spaulding, as you'll hear later from Charles. And we did that because we wanted to pre-vet someone so that if we did have a crisis, it wasn't that we're looking for what firm should we call or how do we handle it. We have a pre-vetted firm ready to go, kind of already on retainer that the school districts can access immediately if something happened. So the coverage it's designed to provide our members coverage for expenses related to navigating a public relations needs around a defined crisis. So the way it works is that GSBA would reimburse you or pay on your behalf reasonable and necessary crisis response costs and or crisis management loss. So we had seven different violent acts or crisis events as we defined in the policy. And if one of these events has to happen, and then it has to result in bodily injury, property damage, or imminent injury to one or more persons, and something that could cause significant regional or national news media coverage for the named member. So the seven events are a bombing, the taking of hostages, a shooting or killing, an explosion, a tornado, terrorism, if it's covered by the coverage document, which we do provide terrorism as part of our property coverage. And then the last one is contamination of food or drink or pharmaceuticals. The other thing I just would note is that imminent injury, just that definition, it's not a typical term that you would hear. That means the actual and immediate threat of bodily injury or property damage. The other item that I just wanted to touch on is there was a question of does GSBA charge for this? So July 1st, 2023, this past year was the very first year that we did allocate a small premium charge to this coverage. This is a low frequency type of event. Obviously, we don't want these events to happen on a regular basis. And thankfully, they have not happened on a regular basis to our membership. But we wanted to start building a little bit of funding for when we do have a loss, if we do end up having a crisis event. So the way we worked it this year is that we put a small charge of 4 cents per student. So just as a frame of reference, if a school district had 10,000 students, the charge would be $400 for that district. So again, it's a very nominal charge, but something that we can build up a little bit of a bank, if you will, just over the years, each year. So the basics and the limits of the coverage, I'll go through the two aspects of it first. The first is the crisis management expenses. So the crisis management, that would be fees and expenses incurred by a crisis response firm for the purpose of maintaining and restoring public confidence after a crisis event. And the limit for that is $50,000 per occurrence with a $100,000 aggregate. So those would be fees that our friends from Charles Taylor would bill for their services.
Jackson Spaulding.
Jackson Spaulding, yes, sorry. An example of that would be consulting advice, printing, advertising or mailing materials, anything that they would do to manage the reputational risk following a crisis event. The second element of the coverage is crisis response expenses. So this has a $250,000 limit with a $250,000 aggregate. So the most that the fund would ever pay out is $250,000 for a crisis event. Examples of this would be emergency transportation expenses, emergency psychology expenses, so that's within 14 days, funeral expenses, travel expenses, temporary living expenses incurred by the member to provide relief or support to any affected persons, and then expenses to secure the scene of a crisis event. So it's kind of the miscellaneous type expenses that don't really go toward a traditional property or liability coverage. And these are not the typical at-fault type coverages where somebody did something wrong and they, you know, sue the school district. This is regardless of any negligence at all. It's just that if you have a qualifying event that I went through at the beginning, then this coverage could be triggered and we would provide the coverage up to these limits.
Thank you, Greg. And let me ask you about the premium charge that is being added in now to the members. Is that an automatic inclusion into their premium with us, or do they have an ability to opt in or out on that?
No, it's an automatic inclusion. And it's something that when we first added this coverage, we felt it was best to just add it for everybody. You know, this is not the type of coverage that, you know, again, it's very low frequency. You're not expecting to have anything like this happen, but knock on wood, when it does, we want our school districts to be in the best prepared position to handle that. So it's something that we just included. We include the coverage for everybody, and we included the premium charge for everybody as well. It's not an opt-in or opt-out kind of scenario.
Great. Thank you for that. That's a good synopsis of the coverage and the program. And back when we started that in 2016, we were very fortunate to have a company like Jackson Spaulding based here out of the Atlanta area, one of their offices. And we have been working with them ever since. And they are there kind of like a big insurance policy that we maybe never have to use. But again, we are very happy and excited to have them. They are well known throughout the country. Charles, if you would, kind of give us a little brief overview of Jackson Spaulding and then what all y'all do, and then your job responsibilities and all as related to this crisis coverage.
David, thank you for the opportunity. Greg, thank you for the overview. It's an honor to be with you all today. As you said, I do work for Jackson Spaulding, and we are a 28-year-old integrated marketing and communications agency. We actually celebrated our 28th birthday last month. And so we are founded on the whole idea that there is a better way. And that idea of a better way philosophy really permeates all of the work that we do for our clients throughout our history and what we continue to do today. As you mentioned, our biggest headquarters, our biggest office rather, is in Atlanta, but we do have offices in Athens, Georgia, near the University of Georgia, Dallas, Texas, and also LA as well. And we have who we call expats, people who have worked for one of the offices, done a really good job, but life has taken them across the country, and we want to keep them and retain them. So we have people who are all over the country as well. When we talk about being an integrated marketing and communications agency, really what that means is that we have disciplines, whether it's coaching, issues management, also thinking about creative. We have so many different disciplines and areas of expertise within our company. We bring all of those to bear to make sure that we're helping our clients in the best way possible. As it relates to the conversation we're having today, I'm a member of our issues management practice. And we think about issues management in really three important ways. We think about being proactive, being ready to act, and being active learners. So from a proactive standpoint, as Greg was running through the types of coverage that would need to be enacted for us to solicit our services, it's obviously some of the most tragic things that you can think about happening, not just to a school, not just to a school district, but to a community. And so before that happens, we want to make sure that people are prepared for those opportunities. Do they have their spokespeople ready to go? Have they identified who their spokespeople are? Do they have a crisis management plan that includes the operational side of issues management, but also the communications side of issues management? Do the people, if you have your issues management plan, the people who are going to be executing that plan, do they know their roles and responsibilities? Have they tested their crisis management plan to make sure it works the way that it's intended to work? Do you have an outside partner who is helping you think through what can work and what should work as it relates to your issues management plan? So separate from the coverage, we just wanted to mention some of those proactive steps that school boards and school districts can take, certainly recognizing that some of the people listening to this podcast have a lot of resources in-house. Some may not have as many resources, but there are still steps that you can take to be prepared. Having a plan, making sure that everyone knows their roles and responsibilities on that plan, and making sure that they test on an annual basis to make sure that they know the roles and responsibilities, and figuring out what works and where things need to improve. Now let's talk about the coverage for a second. So when Greg was going through some of those events that would trigger coverage from and services from Jackson Spalding, that's really about being ready to react. And so I know we want to dive into how you can be proactive on that standpoint. And so we'll talk about some of those in a moment. But the third piece of active learning, once the issue or once the reputational challenge or crisis is over, so many companies, so many organizations want to then go back to normal. And it's understandable. They want to get back to normal operations. That's actually the best time to do what we call a rewind or a post-assessment of what worked with the overall plan and execution, what needs to be repeated, what didn't work, what do we need to add to get ready for the next time. So we think about it in three parts: being proactive with the preparation, being ready to act in the moment, and then being an active learner afterwards. So I'm going to talk about some of those issues management pieces. But the biggest thing that I wanted to say to this group, because we're talking to folks who are really dedicated when it comes to education, I'm a son of an educator. My mom, before she retired, was a grade school teacher in Alachua County, Florida, for decades. And one of the things that I saw her do every single day was prepare her classroom. I remember before the school year started, she prepared her classroom. And that idea of preparation really is top of mind to me when I think about all the folks who are listening, because on a regular basis, you're working to prepare for positive environments so that kids can exceed and excel at their highest level. In those moments where those instances happen that Greg just mentioned, those are tragic events that disrupt all of that preparation. How can you work to maintain the reputation? How can you prepare for those moments as well? So that's what we think about, and that's what we want to try to help and talk about today.
Very good. I appreciate that introduction there. So probably with our audience too, one of the, in addition to being proactive and prepared and planning, they are interested in knowing, where is this crisis coverage going to come into play for them? And what exactly is Jackson Spalding going to be able to do for them when they make that call after they've had maybe one of those seven events?
Absolutely. So when you think about issues management response, I think about it often like a three-legged stool. You need each leg to be extremely firm so that you can sit on that stool. But when one leg is wobbly, that's where it can be hard to sit on it. So when you think about issues management, the three legs of that stool to me are legal, operations, and communications. Our work would fall under the communications aspect, but you need all three working together to maintain the reputation of the overall school district. And you need all three playing together. So here is how we would work on the communications side of things. When something happens, we do a quick diagnostic. And so what that means is we're trying to figure out the five W's: who, what, where, when, and why. If we can figure that out, that helps us figure out the overall game plan, the communications game plan that we should enact. Who was involved? What happened? Where did it happen? When did it happen? And why did it happen? The who, what, where, and when are sometimes questions that you can answer. The why is the piece that's always hard to figure out. You know, I mean, if it's a natural disaster, there's obviously not a why around that. But if it is some sort of terrorism effect, it's kind of hard to get to the why around that as well. But we try to think about those first five questions within the diagnostic approach, because we know that your internal audiences and your external audiences are going to be asking you those very questions. And so not only does asking those questions in the diagnostic review help us put the game plan together, it also helps us start to determine what some suggested effective answers are going to be to those questions that you'll get from your internal audiences and your external audiences. Once we're able to do that preliminary investigation of the who, what, where, when, and why, we're then putting a plan together to say, what are the main messages that all spokespeople should use when responding to the issue that is at hand? And then who are the players that should be involved from a roles and responsibilities standpoint, from a spokesperson standpoint? What is the communication cadence that is going to take place? Who needs communication? When do they need it? We put together an Excel doc full of that communication cadence, and we're really coming up with that overall plan. We're trying to figure out the important audiences that the school district and that particular school needs to reach. We're also trying to figure out the mediums that we should use to reach out to those internal and external audiences. Because when you think about the mediums and the channels that the school or the school district use on a regular basis, those should be the same channels of communication that are used in times of a reputational challenge or a reputational crisis. So we want to have the messenger, we want to have the mediums, and we want to have the message. We also want to put together a frequently asked questions document, because we know that all of the spokespeople are going to get the same types of questions. And so we want to make sure that we have prepared answers for those as well. We're also including stakeholder engagement in that issues management plan. So I know a lot of people think about, well, I'm going to have to talk to the media. I need to talk to the media. Media is certainly a stakeholder, but also the community are stakeholders, neighboring businesses, parents, you know, different folks within your community. They're going to have those questions. How do we best prepare those spokespeople to have conversations using the message? And so we're training the messengers on the message so that they can use those mediums and channels to communicate to that audience. Ultimately, we find that there are four stages of issues response. There's incoming, and then there's calming and clarifying. Then there is returning to normal, and then there's moving forward. So quickly, I'll talk about the incoming. In the incoming, that's the phase where the situation has just happened, and you're trying to quickly respond at the speed of the issue to make sure that people's ultimate questions are getting answered in the initial aspect. Organizations that can't make it out of the incoming could have a permanent mark on their reputation. And so you're working very fast during the incoming phase to answer immediate questions, meet the emotion with the right emotional tone, and get the information out there. The second phase is called calming and clarifying. What we mean by that is you want to spread the message to as many of the stakeholders as possible to calm their concerns based on the issue, but also clarify any misinformation. During these types of instances, information flies at the speed of light, and everyone doesn't always have the accurate information. You want your school district and that individual school to be a source of truth, a source of accuracy, a source of credible, dependable information. And you want, your goals are to calm people's concerns and to clarify any misinformation. If you can make it out of the second stage of calming and clarifying, that's where you're trying to return things to normal operations. You want it to go from a crisis down to a reputational challenge or just down to an isolated issue. And if you are using your steps appropriately in steps one and two, getting to the return to normal is a little easier. And the fourth is really moving forward. How do you move forward once the issue has been resolved, once things feel calm again? That's where you're trying to move forward, but you're also trying to reflect on what happened, because every crisis is an opportunity to strengthen your communication skills. So there are things that operationally are being done, legally are being done. We're focusing on the communication side, and those are some of the steps that we take, but we're always taking those steps in cooperation and in conjunction with legal and with operations.
Very good. And I can relate to, since we started the coverage in 2016, I believe we've only had one instance where we had to bring in your services, and it was at a smaller system, and they had a student suicide at one of their high schools during the school day. And I remember the responses we heard later from the superintendent of that school system, because she had very little experience being in front of the media and speaking. And of course, they really flooded her when that all occurred. But she stated that she received social media searches from Jackson Spalding, where they had checked all of Facebooks and Twitter and all these things. And here's what was being said. Here are rumors that are out there and things you might want to address. And that they also, that y'all also provided speaking points for the superintendent when she went to the media, as well as board members and any other appropriate staff that was speaking. So could you maybe speak to a little bit to that, is how that kind of ties in with what you just mentioned?
Certainly. Well, first and foremost, when you have a death of that nature, a death of any kind, it rocks your school, it rocks your school district, it rocks your overall community. And one of the things that I'm very aware of, and our whole practice is very aware of, yes, there is the nuts and bolts of the doing the diagnostic work, creating a plan and executing the plan. But at the same time, you need to also care for the clients that you're working with at the same time. So in that role of being a superintendent, there are so many people that you have to talk to. People are looking to you for leadership during those challenging times, and they're getting their heartbeat from you. As a leader, as a superintendent, or any sort of leader at a school or a school district, school board, you are going to have really challenging times, because you have to be on for everyone who is in need during that situation, particularly the parents of the student, the family of the student, the friends of the student, the teachers who were teaching that student. They're going to look to you for guidance, for leadership, for a consult, and also for care. But one of the things that we also take really top of mind is, you know, we want to be that person for you as well. So it's as much creating the plan as much as it is, you know, being that person that you can speak freely to just about the challenges of that position. Now, getting down to the actual nuts and bolts of the situation, you're absolutely right. When something like that happens, you know, the school board wants to be informed. Schools want to be informed. Teachers want to be informed. Parents want to be informed. We often talk about leaders are repeaters. You want to make sure you have a solid message in place and make sure that message gets carried out to all of those audiences in a very consistent way, so that people aren't thinking one thing when in actuality the truth is something else. And so you mentioned school board, you mentioned the media, you also mentioned, you know, social media. those are all a combination of audience and channels. So if you think about it, social media is a channel that is highly used and it's been highly used for a number of years. And that's where a lot of people are getting their information from. How can you create an effective message that people can read and consume on social media? But also, how can you monitor the conversations that are happening on social media? Monitoring is really important because it gives you an opportunity to understand what people are saying, what they're thinking, and what they're feeling. And you can use all of those as inputs to either create a strong message or revive the existing message to make sure that it's resonating with those most important priority audiences. The other reason why monitoring on social media is really important is because if there's misinformation that seems to be gaining traction among some of those priority audiences, you can see that happening real time and you can step in and correct it. So we think about communicating through many different mediums to reach those priority audiences. And that was one instance where that was certainly important.
Charles, if one of those seven trigger events occurs and you became and your agency becomes involved with the district, what would be a timeline? Would there be a timeline of how long you would be there to assist them in that situation?
Timelines really vary by instance. There are some where it may only take a weekend, you know, to be quite honest with you. There are some where it takes weeks, months. Everyone is different. I mean, when you think about a natural disaster having an impact on a region, that cleanup and that recovery can take a while. You know, if you think about the media, there's instant interest in covering a tornado or hurricane, some of those natural disasters. But that usually happens within the first 24 to 48 hours. Let's call it the first week to be just conservative with our estimates. And then after that week, you don't see as many cameras, you don't see as many microphones, you don't see as much local and national media attention, but the need that people have lasts long beyond that. And so we think holistically when it comes to communications, not just with the media, but how long are students going to need information? How long are parents going to need information? How long are local businesses going to need information from the school or the school district during that time? So I would say based on the severity of the situation, the timeline changes, but individually, when we work with our clients, we put together that communication cadence document that I'm talking about. So at a high level, it's hard to say an exact timeline for each one of these, but just know that one of the deliverables that we would produce under this would be a communication cadence document that would spell out to the best of our ability how long we think the communication would be needed for the individual instance that we're talking about. And we would review that cadence document with you to see, is there anything missing or when should we reassess and add to that document? So that cadence document would be the guiding document for timeline.
All right. And David and Charles, I'll just chime in just from a coverage standpoint that the actual coverage agreement does state that those crisis response costs and the crisis management losses that are incurred within 30 days after the commencement date of the crisis event is what that we will reimburse for. So
okay.
I think to Charles's point that, you know, typically these things get resolved in somewhat short order. It's not, as he said, the media is, you know, is going to leave after, you know, certain amount of time to, you know, assuming it's not a, you know, horrific thing, but from the actual coverage wording that it is within 30 days from the crisis event.
Right.
And just to add on to what Greg said there, there is coverage in terms of what the coverage will cover. And then if there are additional needs after that coverage, that's where our agency would have a conversation with the individual entity that we would be supporting to really figure out what future engagement looks like after that 30 days of coverage, because chances are, based on what it is, there may need to be some additional resources deployed, but we would have a conversation with you at that moment to figure out, can you handle it in-house? Are you going to need some assistance? What does assistance look like? there are strategy and there are tactics in these issues management situations. And it may be that you would only need us at that point for strategy. Help us think clearly about what we should be doing, but you all as an entity, the individual school or school district, would own the execution of the tactics. So that might be a way that we approach it after the 30 days. But I think Greg is right. Know what your plan covers and what it entails, but also think about the duration of the situation and what you may need afterward.
Great. Great information from both of you. And one last topic area, Charles, is we have occasionally, and since 2016, since we began the coverage, we have had districts contact us and have a situation that would not be one of the trigger events, but they would be considering a crisis at their local level. Example would be a real negative story that had been put out in the press about the school district and some choices and things they had made. We had one that had made some major accusations of racial issues with the board and the superintendent. And when they contact us, we then have referred them to y'all, to Jackson Spalding, but that would be outside of the coverage of our area. So you might want to address that, how that could come into play as well.
Absolutely. So the list that Greg ran through really shows you what would need to happen in order for that 30 days of coverage to be deployed. Think of that as a threshold for that kind of coverage. So what happens if there's an issue or incident that is under that threshold? I think reach out to us. Let's have a conversation. That's where maybe your coverage would not cover it, but you know that you still need help. We're always here to have some of those initial diagnostic conversation so that we can best explain to you what we think a good course of action would be to protect the reputation of your school and your school district. And at the same time, be able to have a conversation about, to the best of our ability, what services we would estimate and what price point that might be. So that way, as you're thinking through how you respond to some of those issues that may not reach the coverage threshold, you at least have a guideline of, okay, we should take these five or six steps. And then you can decide at the local level, can we do those steps internally? Do we need Jackson Spalding for all of that? Do we just need Jackson Spalding for the strategy and we'll implement the tactics? It's all about having that conversation, but you're right. That would be outside of coverage, but that's where we would do the consultation just to figure out what you may need and start to have a conversation around price and deliverables.
Excellent. Anything else either one of you'd like to add that we might have not touched on? I think we've kind of covered from the coverage to what Jackson Spalding can bring to the table to our districts. I do want to remind you that the coverage is, there are a lot of associations that cover school districts, kind of like us throughout the country. And we were one of the first ones in the country that began offering that to our members. So it is a coverage that is there that we hope doesn't have to be utilized, but to know and to understand the ins and outs of it. We would like to remind you, if you have any more specific questions that are not answered here, always feel free to reach out to one of your member advocates or to John Shore or to Greg or to myself or any other staff member, and we will help get the information and whatever information we might need to get from Jackson Spalding. Charles has been a great contact and for us and a support, and we appreciate that. So thank you all for joining us for this edition of the Risk Pods with Georgia School Board Association Risk Management Services. Thank you and have a great day.